Now this is my kind of party. Grab a friend, bring the guns. It's time for the Co-Opticast.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Co-Opticast. This is episode 70 for Sunday, July 31st, 2011. It's nearing the end of summer and, oh my god, the fall lineup is going to be coming up soon.
No!
You know, we're starting to get big releases coming out next month. Yeah. Yeah. I really don't know how I feel about that. This year has kind of flown by.
There's some pretty big titles, too, this year. Things that I've been waiting quite a while for, like Skyrim. You know,
yeah,
not even a co-op game, but it's going to eat my time up for sure.
Well, we have, you know, you have stuff like Gears 3 and everything coming up. So yeah. It's going to be a pretty huge fall. But let's talk a bit about what we've been playing. So, Nick, I see one game.
Yeah, there's actually two. I just added one, but I've been in one of those gaming funks, basically, and nothing's really been able to hold my attention, except for this weekend. Finally, I've broken my funk going back to Civ 5. I've probably played like 8 hours this weekend, actually. Started up a new campaign and stuff, so... I've been playing that. I played a little bit of co-op in that as well with a buddy of mine last week. So still good stuff. They're continuously improving that, doing interface tweaks and balance enhancements and stuff. So, and then also I picked up the Beat Hazard DLC. I think it's called Beat Hazard Ultimate, and I was checking out the co-op in that, and they do some pretty neat stuff in that for the multiplayer. The game actually has like an ESPN style like score ticker at the bottom.
Yeah.
And when like people sign on and start looking for a game, regardless if they're on your friends list or not, I mean you can turn it off. But it'll be like so and so is looking for a co-op game, so you know, just at any time you can kind of jump in to find someone to play with. And then what it does for the co-op stuff is pretty cool. It compares your libraries as soon as you join up, and any of the overlaps you can play. And they also added internet radio stations to it as well. So you can also play, you know, there's the bass songs that come with the game you can all play, or you can choose internet radio stations and play that together as well. So there's a good variety of stuff to play on there, and it's pretty fun.
So what you're saying is that you should play Beat Hazard to NPR?
I guess you can. I don't know if, I didn't see a way to add them. It seemed that there was a bunch of, like, custom ones on there.
I thought it'd be really funny to play Beat Hazard over This American Life or something like that.
Yeah, that would be pretty interesting. But yeah, I mean, I don't know if anybody's ever played that game. I'm playing it on PC on Steam. There's also an Xbox Live indie version.
Yeah.
That has local co-op. This has online co-op. But it basically takes your music and turns it into a twin stick shooter. Like that's like the visualizer of the game. So if the music's more upbeat and faster, there's more guys and bigger guys on the screen and more power ups. And you pick up stuff that kind of changes the music a little bit, either the volume or the bass and stuff like that. So, and it's really, really pretty.
Cool. So it's kind of a like Audio Surf except a twin stick then.
Exactly. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, I love Audio Surf, so I should probably check that out. At some point.
I think the full Beat Hazard Ultimate with the base game with the DLC is $10, so it's a pretty good deal.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I have been playing Catherine, and that is a really damned interesting game because it's it's hard to describe.
It's rendered you speechless.
It has, mostly because it's got two wildly divergent gameplay modes. There is the storyline all takes place within basically a bar. You watch, you know, some anime cutscenes and conversations that move the story along, and then you're loose in this bar and you talk to your friends. And, encourage your buddies. And it kind of, there's this meta game where the way you respond to people outside of the action zones, can influence little subplots, you know, whether characters live or die, things like that within the game. And that's very slow paced. Like, so you'll watch a cutscene for a couple minutes, and then you might spend like 30 minutes screwing around in the bar, doing things like replying to text messages from your girlfriend and the woman you're cheating on her with, and you know, all sorts of stuff like that. And then, you know, every night when Vincent, the main character, goes to sleep, he turns into a sheep and must climb a collapsing block tower and push blocks and climb them and whack other sheep men with his pillow to knock them down and, you know, make sure that they don't get ahead of him or try and kill him.
That sounds completely normal to me.
Completely normal. The thing is, it's really fun, and the fact that there's a time limit makes it really kind of tense, because you're having to solve these puzzles. And it's not just like, oh, just pull the right block and climb up. It's like you'll climb up, and then you get to a point where you need to climb back like 8 or 9 sets of blocks and move them all up so you can go up one more. And it gets really, really frantic and quite difficult, especially on boss fights, which is basically like you're still doing like climbing and levels, but rather than the blocks simply falling away, there's a boss creature that's climbing behind you and can attack you. And it's very stressful. And the way the story is presented is equally stressful. So I feel like, even though the modes are wildly divergent, I feel like it ties in thematically very well. If you just want to experience the story, you can play it on easy mode, which is considerably easier, but still has moments of difficulty. I'll admit that I played about half the game in normal before I said I would like to finish this game.
Yeah.
And dropped it down to easy. And most of the reviews I've read so far of it had been suggesting that you do that.
Yeah.
Because easy mode is still, I would imagine, earlier in the game, which, you know, was not quite too difficult on normal mode, would be painfully easy on easy. But it seemed to kind of level the difficulty off a bit. So, but I've really been enjoying it. It's got interesting music choice. They remix a lot of old classical music for the soundtrack.
Hmm.
So that's pretty cool. And interesting choice is that the co-op is available right away, but you have to get gold medals on the single player stages to unlock the co-op stages. And it's not like you have to, you know, do an inordinate amount. It's like you get one gold medal and you unlock the first stage. You get 3 gold medals, you unlock the second stage. Uh-huh. And there's only 4 stages to do in co-op. But getting a gold medal in single player is not as easy as it sounds, because you can't just drop it to easy, where it's easy to get a gold medal. You have to play it on normal or higher, where the best I did in... I played half the game in normal mode, and the best I ever got was a silver medal. So I'm going to have to probably start a second game up and, you know, play a little bit more on normal now that I know what the levels are and try and gold medal them. But it's tough. It's a very difficult game, but it's very fun. And if you're in the mood for something a little different, I do recommend checking it out. In addition to that, I've been playing Bastion, which is we talked about kind of at length when we went to PAX East. And the game holds up. It is absolutely amazing. The music's great. The narration works really well. And it's a good, solid challenge all the way through. And yeah, you can actually like activate shrines to certain gods, and they add different effects to the enemies. Like, you can't get anything beneficial out of it other than you get more experience for playing with them activated. But there'll be stuff like every enemy you kill does the Call of Duty martyr perk and drops a grenade where it dies. And sometimes you'll have like 20 or 30 enemies on the screen at once. So killing multiples of them drops grenades everywhere and is deadly.
Yeah, I forgot that I actually did play a little bit of that as well.
Yeah. So it's really fun. I definitely recommend checking it out. It has one of the better endings of a game I've seen in some time. And I picked up Trenched and played a bunch of that in co-op, and that game's really damn fun.
Yeah, Trenched is good stuff.
I'm not sure I would continue to play the single player that much after playing co-op, because it was a lot more fun. Because you know how, like, you start a mission and it says, here's your recommended loadout for this mission. And if you don't bring the recommended loadout, you basically lose.
Yeah, it becomes pretty tough. Up.
So playing in co-op, as long as you have all those weapons in between however many players there are, you can kind of roll in with whatever the heck you want. And that was vastly more fun, even though at least when you showed up, you started lagging like mad.
Yeah, that was pretty bad. That was the first time I've actually had it that bad. You know, I played before with Jason and Andrew.
And, yeah, but it's still great fun. It's a cool concept. I like tower defense games, and that's a really fun, really fun take on them. So let's move on and talk about this week in co-op, because there was a doozy of a news story this week. If you have ever thought that the iPhone and iPod Touch and all the cheap apps available on those devices have been eating into the DS and PSP market share, you are right, because the 3DS really hasn't been selling that well, and not even a reprint of Ocarina of Time has been able to speed its sales up. So Nintendo has said, we're going to chop this price by $80, which is insane. The device is less than 6 months old, and it's got an $80 price drop. And, man, luckily, much like the original iPhone price drop, Nintendo's going to make good for the early adopters, and anybody who bought the 3DS at the old price and logged into the eShop prior to, I believe it's August 12th when the price drop goes into place, you get 20 free virtual console games that are apparently not going to be made available to the general public for sale afterwards. So if you feel like Yoshi's Island and Mario Advance 3 or Mario Kart for GBA are titles that you would want to lord over your friends, even though they're readily available as GBA carts elsewhere, you can drop $250 on your 3DS and get those 20 games. Otherwise, like me, you might want to just wait until the device costs a more reasonable price.
Yeah, I call shenanigans on Nintendo there. They'll be for sale eventually.
Oh, yeah, of course. But here's the thing, and I think the bigger message here is that the PlayStation Vita is probably going to suffer a similar fate. Because, the PSP sold really well for a while, and then people said, wow, this is really expensive, and the games are basically the same as they're on my PS2, so, you know, why am I buying these? And then it, you know, turned into a haven for pirates, and then developers gradually left it, and all you get are, like, Atlas and XSEED niche RPGs.
So here's the thing, though, that the Vita actually is a significant hardware upgrade, right? The 3DS, like, it's a minor upgrade at best. The Vita, all around, you're looking at a lot better graphics, a lot more features than the previous one had. The biggest thing with the dual analog sticks, you know, people have been asking for that for the shooters. And the crowd that plays those games is a bit different than the ones that are going to be playing the more casual-ish ones, you know.
Well, there's anecdotal evidence all over of kids, like, only busting out their GBA or their DSs to play Pokemon, and they just use their parents' iPod Touch for everything else they play.
Right.
So I really feel like it's going to suffer a similar fate. Like, it'll have a strong, like the 3DS, it'll have a pretty hardcore crowd that picks it up right away. I mean, 3DS has still sold several million units.
Yeah.
The problem is it's not selling 20 million units a quarter like things like the iPod Touch are.
Well, and even the DS, you know, is still, I think that, you know, the DS
has been dropping too. Yeah. And the other thing is the hardware the hardware is less of the problem than the software, because exactly. A game, even PSN, which has had like the minis and everything, is still selling all those games for like $3 to $5. And most of the games you can get on an iPod or an iPhone or even an iPad are free, 99 cents or $3 at the most, with very few exceptions. And when you have a $200+ device and you're asking people to pay $40 for a single game, you know, the value proposition is going to start swinging.
There's a couple things, too. The 3DS failed at... It launched with a bunch of titles and had nothing for almost 2 months.
Yeah.
Literally nothing. I think there was one release in a two-month period before we finally saw some other games hit for it. So that really hurt it there. So I think a lot of publishers were tentative if they were going to invest in it. I think, though, you know, like, the games are great and stuff on the iPad and the iPhone and stuff, but there's definitely something missing there, you know.
Definitely.
That tactical experience is still something that the hardcore will bite onto. And I think the hardcore don't bite onto Nintendo stuff. The hardcore bites onto more Sony stuff. They want the Uncharted, the SOCOM, those kind of games that are on Sony's platform. And I think Sony's going to have some problems, but remember how happy people were that it was priced at $200 or at $250? Like, people were actually like, wow, this is a deal when it was priced at that. And I think that says a lot, because the exact opposite happened when the 3DS price was announced. We were like, you want $250 for this? Why?
Yeah.
So I think there's going to be more momentum on Sony's side, whether it can hold that for a longer period, and if they can get the software consistently released. I don't know. The other thing that Sony has on their side is they do have a better online network and stuff. So they have the online multiplayer, and they have, like you mentioned, the minis, the downloadable games. And their games that are downloadable are like core games and full new games, where Nintendo's just re-releasing mostly Virtual Console stuff, and they're charging $3 to $5 for, you know, ROMs.
Yeah,
where, you know, like you said, people are paying $1 to $3 for brand new games on other things. So
I just think that the core segment that plays handheld games is a lot smaller than people think.
Yeah,
how many people do we regularly talk to that don't really play handheld games anymore? You know, most of my hardcore gaming friends have a DS or a PSP, and they never play them. They play on their PC, they play on their consoles.
I mean, that's me. I mean, I've never been a big handheld gamer, but I will get into stuff every once in a while. But so
that's why I think the Vita is going to suffer the same fate as the 3DS, really, is because you'll get a lot of core gamers say, oh, crap, this is a really cool piece of hardware, I must have it. And then it's going to be a bunch of games that they're only kind of interested in playing. It's like, it's an Uncharted game, but it's not made by Naughty Dog, so it could be really good or really bad. I don't know.
Yeah.
And, you know, if I'm going to play SOCOM, for instance, I'm going to play it on my, you know, big TV and my, you know, on my PS3 with a headset. And I don't see myself playing something like that on a handheld, because even with a 3G connection, you know, that can't, you know, the lag in that is going to be spectacular, especially over a AT&T connection. So, you know, all the serious multiplayer stuff, you're going to be in your home over Wi-Fi playing anyway. And at that point, why are you using a portable when your console's right there?
Yeah.
So I'd be willing to bet it sells a bunch out of the gate, especially if it launches near the holiday. Because it'll get a big boost off being a new hot thing for the holiday. But I'd go out and say that this is probably the last generation of major handhelds like the DS and the PSP. I'd be willing to bet you start seeing everything move towards like the tablet model or the iPhone model.
Yeah.
Whether there's buttons or not, I think there's going to be a huge paradigm shift in the way software is presented. So, the devices aren't going away, but the paradigm, the software paradigm that we know is going to change. So anyway, Man, we should have probably moved that to our feature story. That was a good discussion. Anyway, even though it was promised to come out in early July, the free DLC for Brink is finally coming out on August 3rd. So it's called Agents of Change. It includes some extra costumes, more achievements, new map. I believe there's a new map.
Yeah, I think there's two new maps, actually.
Two new maps, a bunch of balance tweaks, and it's free for the first, I believe, 2 weeks, and then you got to pay
$10.
$10. So if you have Brink, even if you're not playing it, you might want to fire it up next week just so you get this for free rather than paying $10 for it, because you deserve it, because you played Brink at launch with all of its issues. Let's move on. There's a new game called All Zombies Must Die. It's coming to PSN, Xbox Live Arcade, and Steam. And it is a top-down shooter, and you're killing some zombies. And it is a, what is it, semi-sequel to Burn Zombie Burn?
Yeah, it's the same guys.
Yeah. And the trailer includes bunnies and kittens and puppies. So I would recommend watching those.
Yeah, they're pretty entertaining.
Well, kittens and puppies. And, man, we love Twisted Pixel, but sometimes they're jerks. Because they have issued... They've thrown the gauntlet to the hardcore gamer. They included an achievement in the Gunstringer that... It's called Strings of Steel. And you have to beat every mission in one session in hardcore mode without dying. So good luck with that, because I'm not sure 50 gamer score is worth that. And tied in with that, we have the price point for Gunstringer. It's going to be $39.99, and it is coming out on September 13th. And not only that, it is going to come with a complimentary copy of Fruit Ninja Connect. So, you know, you can wave your arms wildly and cut fruit. I will admit to owning Fruit Ninja on my iPhone and playing it often, because it is... There's something primal about it.
It's a nice distraction. I play it on my iPad every now and again.
It was better once they released the arcade mode that actually had power-ups and a little bit of strategy involved. But it's pretty fun, and that'll be a nice bonus. And I don't know if you checked out Gunstringer in person yet, but it looks like a lot of fun.
I did. I played at 83, and
yeah, it was. I saw it at PAX East. We saw Tim Schafer playing it at PAX East.
Yeah,
which was kind of crazy. It was like a singularity of awesome. And not sure if this is, you know, necessarily sad news, but Media Molecule is not developing any of the future Little Big Planet titles, which is, you know, sad, because Media Molecule is clearly a talented group of developers, but that also means that they're going to be able to concentrate on new things.
Yeah.
And with the sheer amount of craziness that went into Little Big Planet and Little Big Planet 2, I expect big things out of them.
Yeah, they're talented guys there, so I'm...
Yeah. So I look forward to seeing what they come up with, but I also worry about the quality of future Little Big Planet games. So, who knows? I guess we'll see. I guess we'll see what comes out of that. But here's one that makes us feel really old, because
we are.
I don't know about you, but I'm basically the same age. But MS-DOS has turned 30. And I don't know about you, but I had a lot of co-op fun over DOS games.
Yeah, I mean, some of my favorite gaming memories had to do with DOS games just in general, whether co-op or not, so...
Yeah, it was, you know, totally playing Doom, the Doom games in co-op over an IPX network.
Yeah.
And, of course, Duke Nukem 3D, you know. And it's particularly nostalgic since, you know, Duke Forever came out without co-op. So I look back fondly on old games of Duke Match and co-op, and yeah.
Yeah, like I said in the article, back in the DOS days, you had to work to play your games to get them to run the way they were supposed to.
Back in our day, you had to earn the right to play your game.
Exactly.
You bought it from the store, but then you had to fight against your hardware to get it to run. DMA settings and the correct interrupt for your Sound Blaster, or if you're unlucky enough to have a Roland card.
Oh, man.
You know. Or having to set your system to, like, Tandy mode or some horrible thing in the game's setup.
I can just remember my boot menu where I had so many different options. It's like, with 610K of base memory, with 620K of base memory, and 2 meg of extended. Like, you know, I had, like, 10 or 15 of them. Just
what I ended up doing back games. In the day was actually just making boot disks with different configurations. So I didn't have to load my configuration files. I just turned the machine on with the right disk in it.
Yeah.
And that saved me a lot of trouble. And nowadays, you kids, if you want to experience DOS games, you just get something like Boxer, you know, on the Mac, and you know, it's a wrap. I don't know if you've ever seen it, but it's a wrapper client for DOSBox. And what you do is you pop a disk of whatever DOS game you want to play on it, and you drag the disk onto Boxer, and it grabs the installers and the game data, queries a database of all of its known games, figures out what it is, and sets it up for you, and gives you a handy executable to run it. And as cool as that is, I can't do it. When I boot Doom 2 up, I need to see that it is version 1.666.
And it's refreshing the daemon.
And it's refreshing the daemon. And those little, you know, period, those that column of periods, you know, keeps scrolling across my screen to let me know that my system is, in fact, attempting to load the game.
We should make a game that the goal of the game is to load a game in DOS. Like, it's like a make the DOS game run simulation. So you don't actually get to play the game, you just have to get it to run. And it's like a puzzle game.
Do you remember the turbo button?
Oh, yeah.
Which was ironic because you pushed the turbo button to slow the game down.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if you had a... Back in the day, the frame rate of games was keyed into the clock speed of the processor a lot of the time. So you'd play an older game on something like a 486, and you'd be running at like 800 frames a second because the system is all, you know, crazy fast. So you push the turbo button, and it drops the frame rate back down.
I remember, let's see, I had the 386 SX, but I bought the math coprocessor, and it like kind of like it sat on top of it. Like
I remember buying a math coprocessor so I could play Quake.
Yeah, I mean that was hardcore. When I was writing the article, I was trying to remember exactly like the you know that first system configuration. I think it had a 40 meg hard drive with 4 gig of RAM, and it was 386 SX 33. I think it was. Yeah,
I remember the first time I got a Pentium processor. We got a 133 megahertz because we waited. You know, the Pentium 90 came out, and people jumped on that, and it was hot shit. And then we waited a little bit because our computer was okay. And we bought a Pentium 133 megahertz, and that son of a gun had 8 megs of RAM.
Woo!
Oh, man. Yeah. Let me tell you, when I could play X-Wing versus TIE Fighter and none of my friends could, it was a good day.
And that could run Windows 95.
It could.
If you think about that, that's kind of amazing.
Yeah.
8 megs of RAM, Windows 95. You couldn't even load the boot logo of Windows 7 with 8 mega RAM.
Yeah, probably not. I don't even think you could play the startup chime. So yeah, the days of configuring your config.sys and autoexec.bat files are long past, but those of us that remember those days often look back upon them fondly, and we realize just how old we are and how far we've come. And speaking of things that are long gone, the Red Faction franchise is ending. Because
Again, I guess
Armageddon and Guerrilla. I didn't play Armageddon, but Red Faction Guerrilla was a great game. I had so much fun with it. But apparently they didn't sell too well, so THQ has pulled the plug on any future titles in the series.
What was it? Red Faction, Red Faction 2 came out, you know.
On the PS2 and PC.
Like, yeah, I mean, it was a while ago, so there's a pretty big
gap
in between. I'm sure we'll see Red Faction pop up again.
You remember there was a Red Faction game to launch with the N-Gage.
Really?
I'm pretty sure. I'm not sure if it came out. I just remember it being announced. But yeah. Which is, you know, it's sad because they do, there actually was a lot of innovative stuff in it. Like the terrain deformation and the destructible environments were handled amazingly, especially in Guerrilla. So it's sad, but I'd be willing to bet that, you know, in the future, THQ is going to look at its portfolio and say, what can we crank out? Let's reboot Red Faction.
Yeah.
I think it's gone for now, but within a few years, I'm pretty sure we'll see another game. Games that aren't going away anytime soon. How about Portal 2?
That game sold a couple copies.
It sold a few copies, and it made a ton of money on Steam. And though I really don't know how the source of this actually got their numbers, because I thought Valve didn't release Steam numbers, Portal 2 has sold at least 1.1 million copies on the... on the PC. And that's a good thing. Because Portal 2 is great. And there's some interesting stuff in the, we're looking at a top 10 Steam sales games. My English is terrible tonight. We're looking at a top 10 list of games that sold really well on Steam. And it's pretty cool to see that though Portal 2 was number one, Valve made Steam and Valve made Portal 2, so, you know, Portal 2 is awesome and all that. There's Magicka and Terraria on the list as well, and it looks like Magicka has sold an estimated 789,000 copies, which is crazy, because, you know, prior to digital distribution, a game like Magicka might sell a tenth of that.
Yeah.
But it, you know, it just goes to show how strong Steam is as a platform for selling games and how well Valve actually puts indie titles out there. Because number three is Terraria. You know,
that blew my mind. Like,
yeah. Estimated 580,000 copies. It's crazy. There's other good co-op game. There's some good co-op stuff on here, like Monday Night Combat and Brink. Bad Company 2's on here, even though the PC version of the co-op stuff didn't come out. Dawn of War 2 and Borderlands. So lots of good stuff, doing really well on Steam. And that's good because, you know, I'm feeling a lot more close to PC games again lately than I had been for a few years. And that makes me happy because despite the fact that I play a ton of console games, PC is really my top platform. I don't know about you.
Yeah, sorry. I was reading ahead in our show notes, and I think I found an error.
Oh, you found an error. Well, Google Docs found an error, and it just restarted.
Oh, nice.
Yes. Anyway, let's keep going. We got some co-op details for Body Count, and surprisingly enough, it's not shoot the red barrel and blow stuff up with a buddy. It sounds like a bog-standard two-player co-op horde mode with waves of enemies. But the devs say that the game's unique enemy classes have allowed them to create waves that force players to mix up their strategy, which basically sounds like horde mode. Because that's exactly how Gears of War works.
Yeah.
No, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say that I know this past week there was a couple press events in the UK and stuff for the game, so we might be finally seeing some impressions of the title. So we'll see what goes on there.
Yeah, that'll be nice. It's just one of those things that we hear about and then it goes off the radar for a while.
Yeah.
So, you know, Black was is okay. I didn't, you know, a lot of people really liked that, but I wasn't super huge on it. But hopefully Body Count will be better.
Indeed.
And let's round out the main bit of This Week in Co-op and talk about the horrible-looking Double Dragon 2 quote-unquote remake coming to Xbox Live Arcade with the subtitle Wander of the Dragons. Not Wonder, Wander.
You gotta wonder what happened to it.
Oh, there we go. This looks terrible. to put it mildly, maybe it's the combo meter that in the trailer that was using like Arial as a font, or it doesn't look right. It just
Yeah, you know, I felt kind of bad too because this was an exclusive for us. And so it got picked up everywhere, and pretty much everywhere I saw picked up, the comments were universally like, what?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it's... I'll probably play it because I love beat-em-ups, and it has co-op, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, it's... You know, the game locks up in the trailer that we posted, and mm-hmm. it's, I don't know, it looks like a fan game. Like, someone picked up XNA and put some basic 3D models into it and started playing, and I don't know. I want to feel good about it, but I just can't. I don't know about you.
I was not impressed.
Yeah. So hopefully it'll look a little better when it comes out. And I guess it's going to come out in September for $15, which is kind of another kick in the face because it doesn't. Oh, I don't know. When there's stuff like Trunched and Bastion at that price point,
yeah,
this doesn't bode too well, at least for me. Let's move on and talk about some good news. Kill Team, Warhammer 40K Kill Team, launched on the 360 a few weeks ago, and you know, we liked it quite a bit, and it's coming out on PSN this Tuesday, it looks like.
Indeed.
So that's pretty cool. There's not going to be an open beta for Twisted Metal, although, which, that's not necessarily news so much as the fact that it is going to be M-rated. David Jaffe was pretty open about saying he wanted to shoot for a teen rating for it, but it's going to be M-rated, and they're not going to appeal that.
Did you see why it was?
I heard it was due to some live-action stuff.
And it was basically just the cutscenes.
Yeah.
And they toyed with the idea of taking some of the cutscenes out, and they didn't like it, so they kept it.
Yeah. So, you know, I believe the last Twisted Metal game to be M-rated was Twisted Metal Black on the PS2, which was a game that I know I greatly enjoyed, and Jason played it quite a bit with a friend of ours. And I think it's going to be... I really love the Twisted Metal game, so I think it's going to be a really good... good time this fall when it comes out. Were you a big Twisted Metal fan, Nick?
Not at all, actually.
Really?
Yeah, it just never was my thing.
What's wrong with you?
I don't know.
To be fair, Twisted Metal was not my favorite car combat game. That honor went straight to Interstate 76.
Yeah, that's up there, and I would say, although it's not really car combat, would be Midtown Madness. It was kind of like my arcade kind of car.
Oh, I thought you were a WWF Crush Hour fan or something.
I don't even know what that is.
It was a wrestling themed car combat game.
And Interstate 76 was good stuff. What was it? Something 80? What was it? Interstate 84?
Interstate 82. Yeah, it had the DeLorean in it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interstate 76 was cool because it had like the really awesome funk theme song, and it kind of presented itself as like an old like B movie.
Yeah.
I really liked that.
Yeah.
And even though the ending of Darksiders kind of hints at co-op, in Darksiders 2. Darksiders 2 is not going to have co-op because, well, there's a lot of reasons, but up there as an excuse was we put a lot of animation into our characters, and if you put two on screen, we couldn't do that, so.
The world explodes. Too many animations.
So what we're saying is that we need another console generation so that we get enough processing power to put more animations in, except developers will eat more. They will use the extra power to code extra sloppily and, you know, not optimize. And even though there will be even more animations, they'll still only be able to support one character. And I'm being incredibly snarky, but, you know, I really liked Darksiders, and I really have liked to see co-op in the sequel. And they again said maybe Darksiders 3. So, yeah.
It would be cool if they basically iterated on it. So, like, Darksiders 2 would have the first character and then the second character. Darksiders 3 would have the previous two, and 4 would have all four.
That could be an interesting way to go.
Yeah.
But it's not going to happen.
Boo.
And last but not least, Bulletstorm did not end up turning a profit, but Epic is still happy with how it did.
I wonder if marketing played a role in that, in terms of how much was spent on marketing, causing it not to turn a profit.
It could be, and I think, honestly, as fun as the game was, it was kind of a high-concept game.
Yeah.
It's like, your average gamer's not into, you know, like think Joe Average, who plays Call of Duty as his shooter of choice.
Yeah.
You know, run forward, shoot dudes. Bulletstorm practically forced you to use its skill shot system. You know,
yeah.
Knock dudes up in the air and do creative stuff. And I think, as entertaining as that is, like the average gamer is not really into that kind of thing. I think it's more of a lifestyle gamer. If that makes sense.
No, I know what you mean.
Yeah, I think there are plenty of people that enjoy that, but not quite as many as you might think. And let's highlight a user blog, because we've actually been getting some good traffic on the user blogs lately. I've been pretty happy.
Yeah,
I think the survey you sent out really showed people that we had a user blog system.
Maybe. Well, the survey unveiled a few of our features people didn't realize.
Well, so, you know, we kind of knew about a lot of that already, but it was, you know, it was nice to get some feedback on it. But this week's user blog highlight comes from, it's either TC Leary or T. Cleary's user blog, and he calls it Videogeddon. Videogeddon 4, 2 days of co-op and multiplayer madness on 12 screens. And if you have read the user blogs before, you've probably seen this guy's crazy gaming setup. He's got a ton of TVs in his basement. He's got like a Sega Rally or a Virtual On machine, like a Mortal Kombat 3 arcade cabinet and couches and apparently a lot of beer. And he and his buddies got together over a weekend and played like 8-player or 12-player campaign co-op in Ghost Recon.
Yeah.
And team-based games like Gears 2, Left 4 Dead, and such. And man, I remember when I was not married and I didn't have a kid and I could spend all my money on crap like that.
Yeah.
And maybe one of these days, you know, once my daughter is in high school or something and you know, I have money to spend again, I don't know.
It'll never happen. I like how he named it Videogeddon 4, even though last year was the first one. He said this one was so much more awesome, they added 3 to it. So, I thought that was pretty good. And the video is really well done, too. They do some nice cuts and good music. And
yeah.
It was pretty entertaining.
But it's cool, and I really like seeing stuff like this out of our community, so it makes me happy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So check it out, watch the video, and you know, comment on people's blogs, because the more comments users get on their user blogs, the more likely they are to post interesting content. And we really, you know, we're in the dregs of summer and not much has come out, and we really don't have a review of anything current to talk about. So let's move on to some site stuff and talk about upcoming co-op releases, which there are really only a few. We have, up first, we already mentioned this, but Warhammer 40K Kill Team is coming out on PSN on Tuesday the 2nd. On the 3rd, we have Renegade Ops for Xbox Live Arcade, PlayStation Network, and PC. Insanely Twisted Shadow Planet is finally coming out for Xbox Live Arcade on the 10th, as well as apparently Fruit Ninja Connect. Wow. Cut some fruit with your ass by swinging around wildly.
I think I'm going to play that. I'm actually going to get out. I have like a giant Chef Chen like knife, like big cleaver style thing. I'm going to play it with that in my hand.
Just make sure you strap like a Wiimote strap to it so you don't like fling it and kill your cat. Or, you know, pierce your very nice TV with a big butcher block knife. There were a few reviews since the last time we talked. We had Call of Juarez, The Cartel, the SteelSeries 7XB wireless headset, and Warhammer 40K Kill Team. And we had several features, such as On the Download for summer promotions, a really thorough interview with Glenn Schofield of Sledgehammer Games about Modern Warfare 3. Some good answers in there, some nice details. And a co-op casual Friday covering the scope of tower defense games, which are there's some good stuff in there. An Indiana co-op article about Relic Raiders and Stick 'Em Up 2 Paper Adventures. And just about gonna do it. Man, my English is terrible today. You know that?
I guess so.
I guess you know we're just tired. You know, we've been dealing with kids all weekend. Nick had a you said you had a 2-year-old's birthday party and a 3-year-old's birthday party.
Yeah, double dose.
Double dose. And, you know, my daughter is now 18 months old and is developing a bit of an attitude. So she's, you know, a lot more intense to deal with. But here we are recording a podcast for you because we love you. So anyway, let's talk a bit about our Windows Phone 7 and Android apps. You should download them. Not least of which because you get the glory of Co-Optimus right there on your mobile handset, but because Nick looks at our download numbers just about daily, and he gets really excited about how many people have installed these things. So to keep Nick happy, please keep downloading. If you already have the app, delete it from your phone and download it again. Nick will love you. You can buy some shirts from our Split Reason affiliate store and leave feedback for us if you get this podcast off of iTunes. You can follow us on Twitter. We are at Co-Optimus without the dash. And you can leave us a voicemail if you choose at 646-926-6748. And, you know, that was a pretty good podcast. We had, you know, a lot of news, some good discussion, some effective butchering of the English language on my part. And I think that's just going to about do it for this week. So until next time, I'm Mike, that's Nick, and this has been the Co-Opticast.